You are listening to Fit, a podcast created for companies who believe healthy employees are good for business. I'm Stacey Fritz, one of the owners of Fit to Order. Join us as we discuss corporate wellness strategies that will inspire the evolution of a fit and healthy workforce. Welcome to today's episode of Fit. Today we're talking to Andy. Andy was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 8, and he has been managing his diagnosis successfully for the past 37 years. How has he done so? Well, Andy knows how to take care of his nutrition, his exercise, and of course, knows that he needs to be under a doctor's care. Let's listen to hear how Andy is a true success story. Well, hi, Andy Kamenetzer. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm really happy to be chatting with you today. We're pretty excited to share this conference or this interview with you through Zoom. Just to talk about your tremendous success with your diagnosis of diabetes. The whole Fit to Order team, we were really impressed with your story and we're so excited to share it on Connect to Fit. So I'd like to go ahead and get started with just asking you a few questions, if that's all right.
No problem. Fire away.
Awesome. So I'd like you to start with telling us about your story. Just give us a little bit of background information.
Sure. I was 8 years old when I was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes. Now it's called type 1. I got sick. I had a virus and I just didn't get better. I lost a lot of weight. I was urinating all the time. I was always thirsty, always tired, very fatigued. Finally, the doctor, I remember his name, Dr. Topchik, was telling my mother, we found sugar in his urine and he's going to need to give himself injections. Well, I was 8 years old. I knew where urine came from, and I knew that injections were a needle. So I looked at the doctor, and I said, I heard them, and he goes, you have diabetes. And I said, I have to give myself shots here. And he said, no. And then he began to say, you can give them here. You could do it here. And he pointed to the locations, the thighs, the butt, the stomach. So I was like, oh, okay, thank God. You know, when they brought me to the hospital, that was the day I went into diabetic coma. You know, and I woke up and then they began to slowly educate me on how to fill my needle up, how to give myself shots, use an orange to poke the needle, fill the needle. They got a rough idea. They told me about the things that I couldn't eat. That's changed over time. And then off I went.
Andy, what year was that?
That was 1981.
Wow. Wow. So we certainly have come a long way. Sounds like, right? So my next question really is about how you, I mean, at eight, that's a huge responsibility for an eight-year-old. It must have been extremely overwhelming. But take us through the process of how you got to be so capable, able, and successfully able to manage your diagnosis. Was it a short process, or would you say it's kind of evolved over the years?
No, it's evolved over the years. Come on, 8 years old, I have this thing. Let's tell the truth. As a kid in school, you realize that you can leave class when you say my sugars are low. They keep cans of tomato juice and fruit juice in the closet, so I would use it occasionally just to, you know, walk down the hall and do whatever I want and everything. The pain in the neck part was my mother was paranoid, so I always was going everywhere with a large sack of food just in case my blood sugars went low. High school, I abused my diabetes, and I used it to cut my – I understood it. I understood how it worked. So when I wrestled, I knew that I could eat whatever I wanted. I would keep my sugars high because then everything I ate went right through me, but I never had energy. So I wasn't good with it until – probably my early 30s, where I had a couple bottoms with the diabetes. I totaled a car with two friends in it. I was waking up nonstop with low blood sugars, a variety of things where it's just like, okay, enough's enough.
And you were in your 20s when that was happening?
My mid-20s, that was happening frequently, yeah.
Yeah. And so kind of the wake-up call that said, I better get this in check, literally.
I better take more responsibility for, look, we all know what, I knew what to do. I just was, I was lucky. I was getting lucky. I mean, I got into exercise at a young age where it became like part of me. I loved working out when I was started 12. I wasn't allowed to touch weights until I was 13. You know, that was the house rule then. But it was something that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to get stronger. I always wanted to challenge myself with different exercises. So that had nothing to do with my diabetes. That was just a personal interest. So I think I got lucky with that. That I was interested in something like that rather than reading. You know what I mean? Reading is good for you, but I wasn't sedentary. I always like to challenge myself physically. And I had that going for me.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because the connection between a diagnosis of diabetes and the power of exercise and the fact that you had that interest so early on, that is a really great pairing that happened by happenstance, really.
So yeah.
We're not connecting the two before, and we certainly know that the benefits now. What was, after you made some significant changes and you started to pay closer attention, how, lead me through the process of nutrition. And we know that you were already into exercise. So what kinds of changes did you make that you feel that were positively contributing to you being successful?
Well, the first, before the nutrition happened, it was I came up with the times I was introduced to different types of insulins.
Yeah.
And the process of it. I learned to manage the lifespan of insulin. It only has a certain, they call it insulin on board. But then why do you need to know that? Because you need to also know the carbs and what you're consuming. So they taught me about carb counting, and I started paying attention to that. Mm-hmm. And when you begin to pay attention to the carbs in the food, you start to slowly begin to pay attention to what you're eating.
That's true.
And so carbohydrates spike your blood sugars quickly. And I need to inject. I mean, I take one unit for every 10 grams of carbs I consume. My body does not produce insulin, so I have to inject it. My brain is my pancreas. My pancreas doesn't work anymore.
Thank you for saying that, because let me stop just for the people that are going to be viewing the diabetes module. But there is it's interesting how people will clump the diagnosis of diabetes together, but yet we're talking about type 1.
Right.
And there is this, and for you, it's not that we're not still talking about the counting of carbs, but type 1 diabetes is quite different from type 2 diabetes. So Andy is living with the diagnosis of type 1 diabetes.
Correct.
So please go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I started paying attention to it, you know, a lot more. Proteins always tend to be safe, because I don't have to think so much. You know, there's not a spike in the sugars caused by it. But you still need to eat the other things. So I always talk about choosing my carbs wisely.
Yeah.
You know, eating banana instead of bread.
Yep.
You know, and I know there's 30 grams of carbs in the banana, but there's better things in the banana than a couple slices of bread.
Right.
That type of thinking is really where it's been. You know, I stay away from rice, pasta, breads. Obviously, you know, the cakes and the baked goods, and I do have a weakness for cookies. So we're not going to lie, but those are, I know the things, but on a dinner plate, when the plate comes out, I'll try to, you know, no rice, no pasta on the sides, just, you know, the vegetable, you know, you order your meat, like you do it like that and you're safer. You never, because here's the reason why my motivator is the ups and downs of blood sugars. It physically tires you out, but it also changes the way you think.
Uh-huh.
I know when I hear women talk about PMS symptoms, I it's almost like that's how I feel when I have blood sugars.
Yeah.
I'm edgy. I want to get into a fight. Nothing's good enough. I don't have enough energy. I know what that depression, and that's a symptom of high blood sugars. I know that angry feeling. Low blood sugars, that's if I take too much insulin and I don't eat enough, or I exercise too hard. Low blood sugars is you start to get a little like delusional, you get a little cuckoo, you don't make sense, you're flighty, then you can get panicky as they get lower. You don't want that either. You don't want that either. So you need to know how to balance both of them. My goal is just to stay flat, as close to a flat line as possible.
I'm so happy to hear you say that, because it goes back to staying in the middle of the road, you know, which is a great, which is a great strategy for many other things beyond just what we're talking about, but getting on that middle road where you're not having experiencing the highs and you're not experiencing the way lows. And the fact that, you know, the outcome or the symptoms of being at the extremes is probably something that you've come to learn over the years as well, including, I'm sure you are a wealth of knowledge on any carbohydrate and tell me and being able to tell somebody what the carb grams are. So that's, it's interesting because, you know, you think that people probably have to tackle all of the moving parts of this. And it sounds to me like you took them in bite-sized pieces, literally, you know, and figured out how they would work for you. Tell me what has been with your biggest challenge with this diagnosis? The biggest challenge. I mean, I'm sure that there's many, but if you reflect back in time, what has been the biggest challenge?
It's me. At any given moment, it's if I have the discipline.
Yeah.
Okay, and you can look at me through high school. It's, you know, it's my disease. You can go to the holidays. Am I choosing to eat and eat and eat and eat and eat? I like to eat, you know, but am I remembering like, hey, here's the cut. It'll be me. I've never had a problem accepting the disease because I got it when I was 8. Thank God. I'd rather get it when I'm 8 rather than when I'm 18. I barely had any habits yet. Yeah. So I grew up with it. So I have diabetes the easy way and it just became part of who I am. So accepting it was never a problem. But accepting the responsibility, I think, for it at certain times is, and you need to remember, you know, there's going to be consequences. So if I don't like the way I feel, I can look back, and as long as I can see that it was my fault, I said, okay, I earned that. Yeah. I earned the high blood sugar. I earned the low blood sugar. I earned the way I feel right now. And then I know what I got to do for the next time.
That's so powerful. That is so powerful. Not only really hopeful because we all have choices, right?
Yeah.
This is that the power lies in your hands and the decisions that you make on a day-to-day basis. And again, we're talking about diabetes in this interview, but across the board, we are all faced with many, many decisions during the course of our day. And the reality is that that's a personal inside choice, right? So the output that we get is directly connected to the decisions that we make based on what's good and what's not so good for us. So I appreciate that. Tell me your, sounds like you're doing so many great things, but if you had to name one thing that has been the most positive, I think I know the answer based on the interview questions that we had shared ahead of time, but what would be the one thing that you contribute to your success? The one positive thing, your winning move, if you will.
It's my love for exercise. It's just the habit. I do it. So I wake up, I get up at 4. I check the sugars. I eat a little bit, you know, and then I work out. And I do it before work because I don't know what's going to happen when I get done work. Okay, so I know I get that in there. And then I do my job, but you know, it's about an hour and a half. And it's I don't even know that I do it for my diabetes. I just have to do it for me. I like to do that. So maybe I get up early because I can steal that time for me at that time, and I take care of me before the rest of the day. And so whatever the reason is, I don't care because it works, because I know the difference of when I don't do that and when I do.
Yeah.
I can see it in my blood sugars. I can see it in my moods. I can see how I am around other people. I can see how I am at work and things like that. The whole gamut. But the winning move is just doing some type of exercise every day.
If
I don't do it in the morning, I make sure I do it later in the day and whatnot. But I know the difference of doing it and not doing it.
100%. I'm on board. I can feel a huge difference when I don't. And it just makes me a better person all around to have taken those moments. And even, you know, as I've gotten older, my workouts aren't as long as they used to be, but they're, boy, when I'm there, I'm all the way in, and it's a powerful, you know,
that,
you know, to take care of self. I agree. Is your job, if you don't mind me asking, are you, I'm sitting at a desk the majority of the day, or
majority of the time I'm sitting? Yeah. It's a sedentary job, or, you know, I travel, I can get up and move around. But most of the work is done on a phone and in front of a computer.
Yeah. Do you find that to be a struggle sitting for the majority of the day?
I hate sitting. I hate computers. So that's, yeah, it is.
I invited you through a computer.
What's that?
And I invited you through the computer.
Yeah, yeah, but it's, it is what it is. You know, I joined a gym down the road from where the port is. So this way I would go at lunchtime. I'd work out in the morning, then I'd go down the road and I would go do some type of cardio work and then, you know, take a shower and go back to the port where I work. I included that until they're, and then I stopped going there only because they've had maintenance issues. And I said, okay, you guys are done. But I did that when I was up in New Jersey too. I found a place where I could go at lunchtime. And that's what I'll do. I eat at my desk, so then I have that hour free, and then I'll go use it that way. So I guess it's two workouts a day because it's too much sitting. I've even, when I worked in a larger office, I would, I'd set a timer on my computer, so every hour I'd get up and I would do 50 squats, 50 push-ups, and then 50 upright rows, and then I could sit back down again. And I would do silly, that was years ago I was doing that. It was just
Please tell the listeners that I have not paid you to say that.
No, you didn't pay me to say that. It was just because I have ants in my pants, and if I don't do, I can get along with the people better when I do that.
Yeah.
And it gives me like, okay, if I'm going to be here all day, then I like to do it. I'm not forced. It's just remembering to do it, but I like to do it. A lot of people I know, they're saying, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to, I got to exert myself. No, I'd rather be doing that.
That's true.
So that's just how my programming is. So not everybody's programmed that way. Well, I realize.
You know, it's interesting too, because as we were on the quest to find the perfect person to interview, it is really, really hard to find folks like yourself that are not hard to find the diagnosis. Not hard to find the diagnosis, but really challenging to find somebody who's actually taking the diagnosis and, as you say, living with the diagnosis, but living with the diagnosis successfully is been the challenge in trying to nail down various stories on this, because I do think it's hard. And I do think that people are confused. The fact that you had so early on a major component, you had that exercise knowledge. You're talking about somebody who is diagnosed and they didn't really like to exercise anyway, but now you're saying you have to eat in a particular manner and then you have to move in a particular manner and then you have to manage your stress. And oh, by the way, you have to take this, insulin shot. I mean, that's a lot for the general public to kind of digest. So I'm thrilled that you are managing it and reporting. Like I said, I did not cue you in for some of these answers, but I'm so excited to hear that you were moving throughout the day at that desk job. Any issues whatsoever with foot care? Any problems in your feet? Any complications, I should say, from the diagnosis that you're experiencing beyond just the obvious, what we talked about with the highs and lows, if not taking care of it nutritionally?
No, I know. I think I know what you're talking about. I have vision is usually one of the problems for diabetics. And the only reason I wear glasses is because of the computer screen.
Yeah.
So I have to wear a glass when I work on the computer. It's, you know, my eyes have gotten tired from a computer screen. So I wear them when I drive at night and when I'm using the computer at work. I don't need them when I read, but that's not the retina damage that comes from diabetic complications.
That's our age.
No circulation problems. So my fingers, I know of diabetics who have lost their feet. Or their limb up to their knee and things like that. And that's definitely not an issue with me because I stay moving. My A1Cs are at 7 or just under 7. So I'm at what they call controlled levels.
That's
so
great.
No, there's none of that's happened.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So I have two more questions for you,
Ian. Yeah.
How do you think that your family is benefiting from your successful management of your diagnosis? How is your family benefiting from that?
They don't have to think about it. It's mine. It's not theirs.
Yeah.
They, and you know what? I don't, they don't even like realize, it just is, it's the way it is. Is this isn't theirs to think about, which is, I'm glad. This is my thing. They, if I didn't think about it, they'd be burdened. You could talk to my sister. She would say, oh, but what about that time? And, you know, there's been times where they were called to go check on Andy because we think his sugar's out of whack. And they'd come and they know how to deal. They know what to expect and deal with when Andy's sugars are out of whack and they've gotten low. That's when they've been burdened. But those situations don't happen anymore. My wife can tell you. She can tell you. And I, you know, she does not have to worry about that when I wake up in the morning anymore.
That's great. That's really awesome. I think that is a really powerful point too, is that it's not just the person who's received the diagnosis, but it's all the family members that surround that person, that it can and oftentimes does impact family members, the people that are caring about the person who has just been diagnosed. So I appreciate that, because it is a lot. It's a lot for the person who's going through it. And then it's a lot for the family members who, you know, are probably trying to overhelp or help in general. And just knowing that the person is taking that accountability and the responsibility for self is huge. And I know the kinds of things that we're talking about now are going to be really powerful in terms of impacting others, which leads me to my very last question. So at Fit to Order, we talk about the ripple effect of wellness, that when one person gets better, right, that impacts the people, the next circle, which is the family, the close family, and then maybe the next ripple would be friends, and then and so on and so on. And that we know that the power of the group is very, very important, that somebody is not only supported, but that we can do great things when we come together as a group on a similar topic. So I guess my last question is about Andy's ripple effect. What effect, how has your diagnosis, beyond just what we talked about with your family, is there anything that you would say that has provided an impact or a ripple effect beyond just family?
Yeah, there's a guy at work, Keith, whose doctor told him he was pre-diabetic. And the other guy at work, two people from work. Well, one was diagnosed as type 2 diabetic, and the other one is told he's probably going to become a type 2 diabetic. They know I'm type 1. They see me taking shots at work and checking my sugars all the time. I mean, I live with this kit. There it is, my blood test. They see me doing it, but they also see that there's minimal complications. So they'll ask me, well, what should I do? The doctor said this, this, and this, and this. And I said, like, well, you know, I say, hey, guys, come on. Let's call a spade a spade. You're overweight. Look how you eat. You know, and now you're surprised that the doctor's telling that you're probably going to be diabetic. I said, you got to change what you're doing. And I said, you know, oh, my neighbor, he just had this too. And I said, you know, I said, you drove over here with your dogs. I said, why did you drive? You live two blocks.
Oh my gosh.
Why? I said, what are you doing? And I said, and then you're asking me, oh, what do I do with this diabetes thing? I said, well, one of the first things you do is you start walking your dogs a couple times a day. He goes, yeah, but that's not enough. I said, it's more than you've been doing. You're a truck driver, you know, and I go over, I said, I'm not telling you to do anything I don't do. I said, I'm not telling you to get up at 4 a.m. and work out with me. I said, but you got to start to do little things. And I said, and think about what you're eating. You know, and I said, forget the chips, the pizza, all the stuff that's in, you know, the bread and everything like that. Stop that. Stop. Give your body a break. I said, because the reason you're becoming diabetic is because your pancreas is saying, I'm done. Your pancreas is tapping out, saying, I can't keep up with this. I can't keep up with the food you're eating. And I also can't keep up with the fact that I'm burning all the sugar. You're not burning any of it because you sit still all day. And so the pancreas is saying, I quit, slowly but surely. And that's what happens. I said, so you got to get on board with making changes. I said, it's not the end of the world. It's probably the best thing that's going to happen to you.
Yeah, I really love that. You should think about health coaching for people who are newly diagnosed. You'd be really a great resource.
Well, Tony, Keith, and my neighbor are both, they've all lost over 20 pounds.
Because of you?
Yeah, because I don't lie. I don't tell them what they want to hear, and it's been cool to be part of it. So that you want to talk about the ripple effect, I don't even think about it. It was only because you asked that question, but Tony's kept the weight off. He was over 300, he was over 300 pounds and couldn't stay awake during the day. And he's only 3 years older than me. And and now he's healthy and he's got more energy than I've ever known him to have.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Boy, I couldn't have asked for a better interview. This was incredible. And all the things that you shared during our time together, it's just really inspiring. And that ripple effect with the neighbors, I'm going to hold very close to myself about somebody walking their dog just being two blocks away, because that is a little bit funny, but also really what you said was you got to start someplace.
Yeah.
Start walking the dogs. I mean, for somebody who is probably overwhelmed with the either pre-diagnosis or the diagnosis itself, I think that's probably, you hit the nail on the head. It just, you got to start someplace. You have to, and then we'll start to look at your nutrition, and then we'll start to eat better. Just start someplace.
That's right.
So thank you, Andy. I'm thrilled, and I can't wait to hear what the feedback is from Connect to Fit viewers, and I'll keep you posted on that. So thanks again.
Thank you.